That's no moon.
Hello there, and welcome to That's No Moon, a Star Wars Legion podcast. I am Cockles, and this is episode 51, and we are joined with our usual, what we call the OG crew. Well, one of them's late in typical OG fashion, and a guest who I'll come on to very shortly. But first off, I'll introduce the man, the myth, the mystery, who, just because the guest isn't here, he may not get the contacts. He genuinely doesn't eat what he eat dogs in his name, but it's one of these jokes that's just rolled with for the rest of time, and here's his intro song. Andy definitely doesn't. It's Andy, definitely doesn't eat dogs for the purpose of this show and in real life. Terrell, how are we?
Yeah, good, man. But recovered good. After the weekend.
Excellent. Just because you were consularing. I don't know what's the word, to consular. What is the ad? I don't know what the verbiage for that is, but you were head honcho at a GT this weekend.
Yes, correct. That's right.
Wonderful.
For Hemel Hempstead.
Correct. And are you well otherwise?
Yeah, it was a good time. The Germans came over and said guten Tag.
Is that all they said? I'm pretty sure
that's all they said.
Okay.
Well, Finn told us he was very disappointed in us.
why did we disappoint the Finn?
Well, because we don't live up to his high expectations.
Does anyone live up to Finn's expectations?
No, Finn doesn't even live up to his own high expectations.
I'd say poor Finn's family. Yes, there we go. Well, there's that one. Well, do you know what? We have this thing saying guest at the bottom here, meaning at some point a wild dire like a Pokemon is about to appear. But there we go. So I'm going to introduce the guest in the meantime, who I was thinking, you know what? Actually, no, here he is. Now he's here. I'll do Ollie. Do the OG crew. Here he is. It's Mr. Here he is. Introduction music. So that I met the Bow Hell, Fury Road, Ollie Dyer, how are we?
Yeah, you know, good, mate, yeah.
Yeah, not bad, thank you, not bad. I was, you know, I debated on many different themes. Obviously, I had the champions theme for you because you're world champion, all that sort of stuff. We haven't, because you had not been on for a couple of weeks, and I thought, got to drop the fact he's world champion because he hasn't mentioned it for a little while. Feels that was
it's mostly you lot that do. I just sit in my corner not playing much Legion.
Well, that's fine. But now we'll go back to our special guest. Now, he's taken the time to join us today for this episode. He couldn't make it the last episode because he was dropping some knowledge bombs on us the following day. And I was thinking, what introduction music to give him? But there's only really one, given he works for Atomic Mass Games. It's Will Pagani of Atomic Mass Games. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Not bad, thanks, bud. Not bad. What's really cool about that is you get the good intro first, because when next time if shit comes back on, yeah. He will have to have Atomic Kitten instead. So it's kind of like you win the intro music, that sort of thing. So thank you for joining us. You will be fielding some questions for us, which have... you've been tasking your brain, and some were actually answered, as you say, a couple of weeks ago, which is really cool. But before we delve deep into those questions, we're going to chuck out a couple of thank yous to our Patreon supporters. So to those of you who are followers on Patreon, supporters, listen to the show and hopefully in this episode we'll be watching us, because, well, we had technical issues because of Jack. It's all your fault, Jack. Yeah, he knows what he did. I'm being harsh. He knows, it's fine. Thank you for your support. It means a lot. And if you want to know more about what we do, you can go to patreon.com/ That's No Moon, and where you can join our Discord and join the discussions and join the lovely, lively little party that we have going on. And what I should say, the questions that Mr. Will Pagani is going to be answering today are primarily driven from our Patreon supporters. I don't think we basically just said, guys, we're going to have a guest on. If he was on, what would you ask? And we just let you guys, these guys, roll with it. So that's what you get. There's only one I put from me, and it's it's obvious what one it is at the end, but there we go. On top of that, you can get in contact with us like Toby Collins did, who wants to know more. He's running an event at Tier 1 Tabletop in Redruth in December the 15th. So he is looking for that. So if you're in Cornwall down the southwest, you can get yourself down there. He's starting up an event. Looks like that would be fun down there. He's, if you know Mr. Paul Buller, he's friends with him down there as well. Other little shout out, and this is a slightly different, is a congratulations shout out. I had a message via our Discord from Simon Merton, who's one of our supporters, and he was talking in our NFL chat that we have about his son, who represents Team GB and went down into Spain this week, the weekend just been, and they beat Spain in the American Football International League for the under-17s. So big shout out to Corbin Merton, who plays for the Rushmore Knights under-19s club down, I think that's down in Kent, and congratulations to the GB team who beat Spain at the weekend. Well done, guys. And that's the shout out there. So yeah, get a little clap for Pagani down there as well. So really good. Well, I did ask Simon, does your son play games? Does he play? And he went, no, I tried. It failed. It did make me laugh, but no, credit where credit goes. If you're winning internationally, that's what you get. All right. Shall we dive into some questions, boys? What we'll do, we'll ask the questions and then we'll just let it flow like a natural conversation, because that's what we're good at, really. So before we grow in, Pagani, if I can call you, yes. Pagani, because that's apparently what everyone else calls you.
That's, we got a lot of Wills.
Yeah, so, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, three in the development team.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit of background, what you do, and just for context for people who may be listening first time or don't really know what goes on, other than there's like, I've got a game. They don't really know anything about the people behind it.
Sure. I was born in Texas in the United States, lived there for 30 years. Then recently, not so recent, once you have kids, time becomes weird. So recent, but 8 years ago, moved to the Pacific Northwest to begin working on games. Before I moved to the Pacific Northwest, I ran a local hobby shop for 8 years. So did a lot of retailing, playing a lot of different games, doing all that kind of stuff. I traveled a lot, playing various games competitively, traveling over to Europe for several Worlds events and things like that for various systems. So I have a lot of experience in just playing a lot of different games, of miniature, card, board, video, everything. Just always have lived and breathed games. That's my personal life. And then my not so personal life is at Atomic Mass Games. I am the game development director. And what that means, the fancy title really just means I get to herd all of the other directors and not directors, developers. Directors do their own thing. and make sure that all of the various games that we work on are moving in the correct direction and are getting the support that they need and the projects are getting done, and help out with all of the different games in terms of when they run into problems or things like that for the various lead developers for the different game lines. And I spent a lot of time very specifically working on the Legion 2.6 update with Andrew Dersom and Ben Ransom, two of our developers. Cheers to them for all the hard work they put into that. It was a colossal undertaking and an awful lot of work, and they did a great job.
I agree. I think they did as well. So we're looking for, we've just, as the game evolves, it's getting exciting and all this. I'm like, so many different things, which hopefully these questions will enlighten some things for many people. So I will crack and deep dive in. So question number one. I can't remember who said what question, so to those of you who did submit them, thank you, and I'm sorry I didn't write down who said what, but from, let's just assume, patron supporter number one. FFG's release plan was to do a little bit from different eras and IPs in Star Wars. So, for example, Sabine and Kallus, they're moving to Jyn Krennic, Shore Troopers, Pathfinders. And at the time, they said they'd plan to return to those and fill them out more. So is that something that you are looking into? And we asked this specifically because Jack, who does our painting and videos, is a huge Jyn fanboy. And we know that he'd love to see the tweaks to Jyn and the Rogue One sort of element itself. That's his thing. So it probably was a Jack question, to be fair, let's be honest.
Ha ha, he gotcha. Short answer, yes. Long answer, also yes, but with more words.
I like that.
Yes, right? Like, we have lots of different opportunities inside of all of the different things inside of Star Wars, whether they be the animated series, the different cartoons, the movies, the TV shows, all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of places to explore inside of those things. So whereas, such as Rogue One with Jyn is the example here, right? When we get to a point where we say, hey, there's some really cool stuff that we can make from that, and it crosses a couple units, a couple characters, a couple factions, whatever that is, we'll jump right in and we'll do that kind of stuff. So it's not sort of like we're done with anything, really. Like, there's so much cool stuff that we can make and so much cool stuff that we want to explore and do those kind of things that, yes, I can confirm, I guess, that we will be going back through all sorts of different things through all different areas.
If you listen quietly, you can just hear the sound of Jack Proutin going just like that, really excited way. But yeah, but oh, that's that one. I guess that means, I suppose, you're in no real rush if you're for revisiting things. So obviously it's not going anywhere, is it? It's one of those things that Rogue One's there, you can just go, right, we'll go back to it, or a specific, I don't know, a New Hope thing going on, that sort of thing. It's not going anywhere, so you can come back to it at the time of choosing, really.
For sure, right? And we always talk about our plans are years in the future, right? It takes a very long time to create a miniature, to create a mold for that miniature, to have it produced, to have it shipped, to create the rules for miniatures, to create the art. All these things take a very long time. So we have a very long timeline of Legion, and we're not going anywhere. And I don't see Legion going anywhere. So I can only imagine that we will be back to all of these things at some point.
I like the fact that you said can't see Legion going anywhere. That's exciting. That's always fun. So question number two, is there any design space for combination bonuses specifically? So i.e., take these characters to get a special rule for the army. For example, take Han, Luke and Leia and Chewie to get, quote, a Falcon rule, special rule.
So yes, absolutely, right? Design space is very open, right? It's one of the things that we've been working on since our stewardship began of Legion, is how can we find new things to make that aren't necessarily just new keywords, right? So Battle Forces are an example of this. We see Brightree Village. You can take a bunch of commanders and operatives, and then you get the Brightree Village rules, which isn't quite what this question is asking, right? But that is definitely a way that we could execute something like this, would be a battle force of some sort. So a relatively open rebel battle force that said, hey, if you take these commanders, you get these special rules or something, right? You could do that kind of stuff. And then we also explored this a little bit with the Inquisitors, where they have like their command cards that play off of each other and stuff, right? So once again, not exactly what this question is, but yes, absolutely. There's a lot of ways that we can create interaction between characters inside the rules, whether that be battle forces, the rules cards themselves, right? We also have, what is it called? Teamwork? Is that the one where we make tokens, other people get your tokens? So like, yes, absolutely. There's a lot of different ways to go about doing something like this. And I think it is a very cool and fun and interesting way to do this, right? Because we want to see the companionship and the friendships and the working togetherness, which is totally a word, of the characters from the shows and from the movies on the tabletop.
Yeah, I remember you touched on it briefly with Brightree Village. I remember Schick saying about it, that was your first experiment with that kind of element of teamworkingness, as you want to call it.
Yes,
that was the experiment, the first dive into that kind of rule thinking and working, that sort of thing.
Well, I believe that was the, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe it's the first, maybe it's the only place where you can take all of the major Star Wars Rebel characters in the same army at the same time. I don't think it's a very good army, but you can do it. You can do it.
It's all that minus Luke, isn't it? But
he was busy at the time.
Yeah, he was having a heart-to-heart with his dad.
He was there, he was in the woods. At one point.
on a bike. Oh, that'd be fun to see Luke on a bike. But there we go.
We've already seen the spoilers for Grievous on a wheel bike. Well, I'm not sure what they're called.
I don't even know what that's called, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Grievous the thing that goes ning 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 ning. That's
it. And what's the ribbon go? Come on. If you're doing the bike, you've got to do the lizard now.
That's my best guess. I'm not 100% sure. It's been a long time.
I was hoping to embarrass Cockles rather than you, but that's great.
Hello. That's what we call teamwork, my friend. That's what we call teamwork.
Yeah.
but I think, like, because obviously we're going to be seeing what Luke on a ton?
Was it Luke or was it Han and Luke?
I don't know.
I think it's both, isn't it? Yeah.
Cavalry Jedi. What that'd be a concept enough.
is this 370 point unit?
And coming at you speed 3. Love it.
You've muted yourself there, Cockles, while you're talking.
Oh, you know, I was tapping the thing while I was looking. I was sort of flipping between screens so I can make sure I see questions at the same time.
That's right, I've got the next one for you.
You go on then.
Because I think I actually asked this in our chat. And it kind of follows on a little bit.
Go on then.
Squeeze mine in. So when you're designing the units, obviously, for theme or teamwork or any of that kind of logic, do you look at the current meta state of what's released, or do you kind of try and plan or have like a theory of what the meta's going to be based on your 2-year release plan or like when you think it's going to fit in, if that makes sense?
As you stated, right, we have a 2-year lead time on things for when concepting all that stuff begins. So when we start doing that, we have to really try to predict where we're going to be in 2 years, which can be very difficult. So we don't look too much about what the current metagame is doing. I mean, we obviously have like the major archetypes of lists and things like that that we're looking at, but we're not as focused on, say, specific units or specific commanders or things like that, unless they are integral to that archetype. So when we're designing these things, we're mostly looking at like, what is a really cool thematic thing we could do with this, or what is an interesting playstyle or niche that this could fill that doesn't currently exist. So we try to create new experiences with all of the different things that we make, or reinforce things with, like, reinforce experiences that we want to see more of or want to see gain power level or things like that. So it's much less about, say, the competitive metagame when we're creating new things, and much more about what is interesting and exciting and how can we create a different play style or a new way to play or something like that out of those different things.
No, that makes sense, and it kind of falls in line with when like the new units do drop, you kind of can see that theme and logic of the characters falling in, because I think that's always been my favorite thing, that most characters are on point with how they come across in the shows and stuff. They might not be the most powerful, but they still are like very on point and thematic. That's always been something I think you've done really well at.
That's certainly something that we really, really push for, right? Is we don't necessarily hope or think or believe that every new release will create a new metagame or create a new army archetype or something, right? But we do want to make sure that every single release that comes out is exciting for someone. And whether that's the competitive players or the casual players, we have a saying around the office that is everything, and usually we're talking about characters, but it could be anything, right? Like these Aqua Droids that just recently got shown on our webpage and stuff.
Don't excite Andy with the words Aqua Droids there. You'll make him just sort of like...
But like everything is someone's favorite thing. So we need to make sure that whatever we're releasing, whatever we're doing, it meets that person's expectation of the thing. Once again, not necessarily through power level, but through excitement or uniqueness or options or things like that. So
yeah, nah, that's cool.
That all makes sense. Ollie, would you like to field the next question, please? I mean, you could if you're not muted, but yeah, that will make sense.
There we go. Technology, yeah. It's not my bag. So I think with. Obviously, with the rebalance that happened last week, this question's a little bit moot, but it's in the case of like OMG generally like happy to rebalance units that have already been changed already in the first half of 2.6, kind of as we look ahead again in the next 6 months, we've got Worlds again. As we then get the full set of releases next year, will we also have another look at the rebalances?
Short answer, yes, absolutely. Sorry, I'm a short answer, long answer guy in meetings. So
it's all good. This is this and this.
Yeah, yes is the answer, but I want to be clear that rebalance does not necessarily mean like remaking a unit card or anything like that. From my perspective so far, everything that we've seen in the game from 2.6, if it requires further balances, can be done with points changes or points updates, right? So whereas if something were to become a huge problem that required large correction, yes, we would handle that however needed to be done, whether that's points or whether that's errata or something like that. But the goal is to errata as little as possible and address as many things as we can with points, for a lot of reasons, one of which is accessibility of players. People don't particularly love when they show up to a game and then their unit owner does what they thought it did and things like that. So, and we understand that, and we want to make as few changes as we can at as few intervals as we can, which is why we're waiting till April to do the next sort of announcement stream with all the different stuff like that, right? We don't want to like drip feed, here's a couple characters, here's a couple characters, because every time something changes, it's a point where someone can get confused or get lost, or is this correct? Am I using the right card or everything like that? So we wanted to get this out in front of everyone as quickly as we could, which is why we did that at Mini Extravaganza. And then the hope is that the one more drop in April, and then we'll be at launch at the end of the summer with all the card packs and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
That makes sense. That makes absolute sense. Moving on to that, from the changes that Ollie sort of touched about there, what changes do you feel have been the best so far? So changes from previous to 2.6 and in general.
Personally, I'm a huge fan of how these scenarios have changed. They create, in my and our opinion as Atomic Mass Games, a very engaging game where players are rewarded for interacting with their opponent and fighting each other, whereas a lot of the gameplay previously was relatively standoffish and poke-oriented and things like that. I know the Worlds list from last year was certainly not that, and that was very exciting.
Yes, I mean, I make an interactive list, and then you take it away from me.
It's all your fault. It's bloodbath. It's all your fault, Ollie.
So every day I'm singing my praises to old transport. Just, we miss you.
This is really cool. This is the dire interaction.
But yeah, the turn zero stuff, deployment, and I think missions are my two favorite of the larger scale changes from the 2.6 update originally, because I think they do a lot to give players a lot of chance to sort of flex their abilities and their assessment of the table and how they want to position their units, where they want to move. And because several of the scenarios require you to sort of split your army, it creates a situation where you have different sort of archetypes have the availability to exist inside of this. And we certainly saw that the Galactic Republic armies were doing very, very well at this. This is why we had those changes a few weeks back to do that, to kind of hope to curtail that a little bit, to give space for other things to breathe. We believe that the changes that were put forward are going to give factions like Rebels and Separatists, hopefully ones that are not necessarily only playing B2s, room to breathe, right? Because now these ARC troopers that were very aggressive, very fast, that threw huge dice pools can no longer necessarily, hopefully, dominate the game. Giving other
spoiler for you, as when we come on to the reviewing of the GT later on, you'll see some of the, I don't know if you've seen the top eight. So when Andy talks about that, maybe that's some information for you might like.
Fantastic. I hope I do.
I'm sure you will, but it's so we had the first GT with the since the previous Wednesday drop. So hopefully that'll be some interesting info from there. So anything else? I personally, I know I love the deployment. I think it's really cool because it's kind of like when you were setting up a game, you'd be like, right, we'll set that one up and I'll put everything down, and it's that you've by removing the half there, right, we're setting everything up kind of. I wouldn't call it an issue. What's the word? Phase. It's kind of like turn one and the deployment merged into one makes it much more interesting and a really cool game of chess in terms of, well, I'm going to put this here and they're going to do that and get sort of double guessing what X or Y unit will do in any given deployment / turn, if that makes sense. I really like it personally.
We certainly talked a lot about how deployment order, order tokens on the first turn, where you're deploying things was all hyper relevant in this new turn one. And that was something that all of the developers really enjoyed and really liked, was this very cat and mouse game that was going on.
I think the deployment change is really unique. I don't think I've ever seen it in another game. Like there was at Hemel, it wasn't just Legion, it was all the Atomic Mass games plus a sci-fi massive game that they had a team tournament going on at the same time, but they kept on coming over because the terrain is always a big draw when you compare the two, and a few of them were like, oh, so why is there no models on the board? And I was like, oh no, they're not all dead, like it's not like that, it's they haven't started yet, this is deployment is like you move onto the board. And they're like, but they're all in dice. I'm like, yeah, that's part of turn one. Like, it was this really foreign concept to them, but then they were very, very intrigued by it. They're like, oh, okay, that's like really different. And then I was like, yeah, it opens up all the tactics, as you're saying, like the cat and mouse, I'm going to the left, no, you're going to the right, and the back and forth of it is very, very unique in a good way.
In a good way, definitely unique.
I think it's definitely the one that I was the most cautious about when comparing it between versions. And I was like, this is going to be silly. It makes no sense whatsoever. And then when you play it, it does kind of flow and you're like, oh, okay, this makes sense. And there's a new tactical side of it, which it just as much as before. Yeah. And it's the one I've probably flipped 180 on quite quickly compared to some of the other changes between versions.
We always like to think of it thematically. We always talk about the thematics and how important that is, right? Mm. And that applies to all aspects of the game. We like to think of it thematically as like the prepared position units are the ones that are already out in the battle. Like they're already there, they're already fighting, they're dug in their trenches and things like that. And then the rest of your army is what's showing up to support, right? So to me, that really helped me sort of grasp it and understand like, oh, okay, this is what's happening thematically. Because I think a lot of people were like, well, everyone's just always deployed before, so like that's what happens, everyone's there at the battle and doing that kind of thing. But to me, that really gave me the like cinematic nature of it. It's like, oh, the tank is coming out from the fog of war and stuff, right? We don't know where they are, we don't know those kind of things. There's yeah. bombs, there's explosions, there's a saber tank or something, right? Like,
that kind of falls in line with someone explained it when they were doing a demo game, and I kind of picked up on it. It's like it made perfect sense thematically. Like a free pip is your commander standing there barking the orders at people and like telling them what to do, which is why it gives out loads of orders and you're not going first for that reason. Where the one pip is your leader's like, I don't care about the army, I'm doing my thing importantly now.
Absolutely.
Again, it kind of leans into that theme of how that kind of mechanic works as well.
Absolutely, right? Like your higher pip command cards, you give them more orders. It takes more time to disseminate that information.
Yeah.
And captains have to give out that information and tell the troops what to do. I don't know. I think it's a brilliant system for a command style system in a game.
I'm a big fan. It's kind of what hooked me, if that makes sense. Ollie, what was your favorite change in that you enjoyed? Obviously, you said you didn't like the transports for your time. You said fine.
I'm enjoying just having more units on the table. Like an extra 200 points is good, and having it be over a shorter span of time. Obviously, I don't think you could do 6 turns, 1,000 points realistically, unless you play at like the pace that probably you and I do, Andy. and we play incredibly fast. So for general sort of players out there enjoying like your Saturday afternoon tournaments, that kind of stuff, I think 1,000 points, 5 rounds has probably been quite a good change up. Because you can just add more. You get more named characters. Not for me, because I'm still going to be putting Fury Road on the table and having zero named characters except for Terrence, who drives my raiding party bus.
Terrence.
Well, you know, he's Terrence the bus driver.
Hello, I'm Terry the bus driver, and I'm a raiding party leader.
What's wrong with Terrence?
Well, it doesn't rhyme with a bus, like Barry the bus driver.
Barry doesn't rhyme with anything in bus driver. Oh dear.
Alliteration is what they're doing.
Yeah, that's what I was after.
Barry Bushboy. Anyway. Well, on to the next one then. So, obviously, we spoke about the stuff that has changed, but I suppose, are there going to be any new mechanics introduced in quote, second wave that leans more into the identity of rebels and other factions that you have mentioned in previous interviews. For example, guerrilla tactics. At the moment, we have infiltrate on a few units that is good on turn one, but not much else. Would you consider new mechanics that let said factions get more free moves mid-game? For example, maybe independent move or maybe an advantage for rebels that gives... Everyone's looking for rebels advantage. There we go. Or maybe an advantage for rebels that gives out moves mid-game, apart from the fact that Leia has that card, but there we go. But yeah.
I mean, I think it depends on what you mean by mechanics, but there are definitely new things coming, right? So there are new keywords that are going to be shown off in the stuff and on
such as
I mean, do you count tempted as a new keyword from the previous release?
I count it as a revamp. I'll take that. It's very diplomatic. I like it. Try to catch you up. Didn't work.
There's definitely going to be some revamps. There are some new ones. Off the top of my head, I can only remember one name, which I will not be giving you, but there is more than one.
Ollie's had one. Go on.
And we hope that those keywords on various commanders and things like that will then trickle down into other units to give more faction identity and feeling and things like that. So yes is your answer.
Ollie has had an idea for an upgrade for a while. What was it? You built that one.
Right. This is the one for Ames, isn't it? So it is a vigilance for Ames.
Okay.
Or something in that manner. But something like where if a sniper unit reduces their maximum speed to zero to show that they're taking aim, then they are able to retain aim tokens into the following turn.
For when you roll that first double hit and don't need it.
Yeah. Or when you roll that double blank, but something where you kind of like bunkered down, you know you're not moving, you're really focused, and so you get a benefit from it.
Sort of like a dig in situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that, but only like obviously it'd only be available for certain units. You can't have Vader just sat there going, really.
How does Vader go?
He's really focused. He's either really focused or constipated. It's one of the two.
I mean, that focuses me. So
in 2 years' time, when you see that keyword, Ollie, you know you had an influence from there. Just mark the date now.
It is November 19th. There we go. Yeah. Cool. Andy, do you want to ask the next one?
Sure. So as a studio, you've given us some great prequel and original trilogy units and started to venture into the Mandoverse. Are you open to exploring the First Order and the Resistance? They have some great scope for some interesting battle forces similar to Shadow Collective.
That's from Tom. He really, really, really wants to see a Resistance stuff, and to the point that he also made that noise that Jack made and went, ee! That sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a little bit earlier, where we have access to all of these wonderful things, various movies, cartoons, shows, all this stuff, right? And we're not going anywhere. So eventually, in theory, we get to everything, is the hope, right? So we're just going to keep making cool stuff and keep expanding and keep doing all the stuff for many, many years to come.
So a quick question that's not on the script.
What's
your favorite film?
My favorite film is I'm gonna make a lot of people angry with this one. My favorite movie for Star Wars is probably Solo.
Oh, that's not. I would not have put that out there as thought.
I don't know. I think that movie is way better than it got.
It's not terrible.
No, it's not.
Really, there's worse films than that for sure in the franchise.
Andor series is my favorite Star Wars overall.
Andor series, can't complain.
The new series is coming out soon, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
I think we get Skeleton Crew before we get Andor season two. Yeah. With Jude Law as a pirate, I think it is.
Oh, is that the like the non-Jedi for TV series?
Yeah. I keep getting reminders on Disney Plus, like, coming soon. I'm like, when?
Just on that note, we've mentioned TV series and things. I assume you can, or you don't, you might have to say yes, or you can stay silent. Does that mean that the game universe is a potential for investigating as well? I know, like, because you've added Iden Verzio,
Commandos,
and the Commandos that were in Battlefront. Does that mean like other things, like, I don't know, like Cal Kestis or Outlaws, maybe, or something like that? I don't know. Just chucking out there, is a potential, maybe.
Riot Troopers, surely, right? Because I don't have Riot Troopers been in it, because they're in Jedi.
They're in Fallen Order,
Fallen Order. But I don't think I've seen them in any other.
I'm not 100% up to date on what is and isn't in, so I can't answer that question, unfortunately.
That's fair. You did say you have children as well, so we kind of forgive anyone who has children who's out of the loop for that one. Yeah.
It's amazing what sleep does for your memory, or lack thereof.
I'm currently enjoying the stage where, so just as a small side note, Hallie, I have a 3-year-old, she saw Santa the other day. What did she turn around and say? Took her there, hold her hand, go see Santa. She's like, no, Daddy, you stay over there. And it's like, oh, okay, I'll just stay over there. So I went a bit closer to say, are you okay? Daddy, told you stay over there. It's like, okay, right, I know where I'm being sassed. Here we go. Battle Forces. The question it reads as, are Battle Forces, potentially being the word here, going to be a thing of the past? You mentioned before a potential change in the Force organization chart for list building, or are we going to see more as there are some easy ones still to make, I think, as we've touched on, like a specific Rogue One style. Mandalorians as well would be an example and would be a great print and play, because obviously Mandalorians already exist in the game. They can also seem to give it says they seem like a no-brainer to giving more depth to existing factions without releasing more minis.
Yes, absolutely. Well, hold on. No, Battle Forces are not a thing of the past.
Oh, right, so
that was the
changing.
we have no intention of stopping to make Battle Forces or getting rid of the currently existing ones. Battle Forces give us a lot of places to add things to the game that do not necessarily require miniatures, but do allow players to explore their collections and use them in different ways. And this goes beyond just things like Shadow Collective or Brightree Village, which had a ton of new miniatures alongside them. We also have a lot of other stuff like Blizzard Force, like I'm going to blank on a bunch of these, but we have 501st, Severus Invasion, all that kind of stuff, right? So there are more of those coming. There will probably always be more of those coming because, as I've said, we have a very large set of material to work from, and we want to get as much of it as we can into the game. So all sorts of Battle Forces are a big thumbs up from me and Atomic Mass Games because they give new life into things. And one of sort of the mission statements of Atomic Mass Games, and we try to do this through all of our games, is giving players additional ways to engage with the game and to engage with their collections and engage with their miniatures, whether this is through hobby, whether this is through play, whether this is through competitive play, whether this is through casual play, whether this is through narrative scenarios, or all these different things. So Battle Forces are just another way that players can take the miniatures that they've spent a ton of time hobbying and painting and customizing and building and put them on the table and play a great game with them. So any way that we can do more of that, we're always here for.
I've just had one pop in my head. I know that, Ollie, one of your favorite units, what is it? The Airspeeder, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to.
Eight Airspeeders.
Yeah, Rogue Squadron, basically, would be fun. Done, that sort of thing. with a command card, oh no, Dak's dead, that sort of thing. Something like that. You're shooting Dak and then gone, that sort of thing. Anyway, but
I think that would be the wildest list to play.
It'd be fun to watch.
I think as of this moment I could field it.
I think I've got
8 will be 1,000. 7 will probably be 1,000 points.
They're about 100 and something, aren't they?
They're about 147 145-ish, so...
Yeah.
He knows. They're his favourites.
Yeah, you can fit 6.89 Airspeeders, so realistically, you can probably do you can probably do 7.
So is that 0.89 the one that crashed?
Oh, yeah. That's the one I've not quite built yet.
There you go.
The special, the Battle Forces on turn 2, one of them has to crash, and that's why you get 7.
Gone, done. Ollie, would you like to field the comical question that has been an important argument?
So Cockles often makes quite wrong facts, and he does this quite often. And he was telling us that a super squad of fleet troopers is just better than a super squad of B2s.
Incorrect. I said no. You're incorrect. I said that the dice pool of a super squad of fleet troopers is better in melee than a dedicated melee unit like the Magna Guards. That was my
quote. No, it's B2s.
No,
it's the argument is B2s.
Magna Guards was my that was my quote. So you've misquoted me, but I just want to get the question right. That's all.
So the real question is B2s or fleets? Which one's better?
The answer is obviously fleets because they have. Hold on, it's because they have cool hats.
Fair play. All right then. So what we need is a hobbyist to go get a B2 and stick a little hat on, and then they'll win the argument.
But there's the counter argument of B2s are kind of also wearing cool hats, but they just are the hat.
Okay. Yep.
On top of a B1, so like
someone did see in the Discord, the Legion Discord recently, post that they've made Nutcracker stormtroopers and given them little Nutcracker hats.
I saw this today. It's brilliant. It's really, really cool.
So that was.
I'm going to go and buy a load of Cad Banes just so I can put the hats on my B2s now.
I also know that that hat is a separate piece, and I love that someone else knows that for that reason. Yes. Putting that hat on other things.
It is the best hat ever.
I think I've got one in the cupboard, Andy. You can have one from me. There you go. You can get
started. Nice. And then the last question. And the reason it's the last question is because I asked Schick this as the last question back in March at Adepticon, and I literally just said, Gungans? Question mark?
I mean, on a long enough timeline, right? We talk about how we have lots of things to explore and we want to make everything that we can make. And Gungans are part of that.
And then I'll say exactly what I said then. I said that wasn't a no. That wasn't a no, gents. That wasn't a no, everybody. So that was it. He said very much what you've just said then. And the Discord that we had and the YouTube chat afterwards, like, oh, they're coming. Because everyone thought that that Schick had dropped a little bit of a secret one and said, like, oh, the Bright Tree Village was a precursor to potential Gungan Battle Force and all this kind of stuff. So everyone was like, Gungan, 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 Gungan. So it's quite funny. But
we all hope.
Well, that was true. Exactly, that was it. It was entertaining, and it was what it worked.
Yeah. What we need to do is get Pagani to rank all of the films, because obviously Range Troopers coming from Han Solo is an
indicator. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was your driving force. And then obviously we can find out where Gungans lie in Pagani's list of priorities.
I do not make the schedule, I will tell you all that. It's not part of my job.
What you can't see is his fingers crossed underneath out of sight of the camera there. That's cool. Well, that is the questions interview section of the show for the moment. So to everyone who sent in questions, sorry, obviously can't answer every question because it's just not enough time in the world. At the same time, a lot of the questions were answered 2 weeks ago, last Wednesday. So that kind of helped. But hopefully going forward, we'll have Pagani or Schick coming back on at some point in time. And we'll get more and more out of you. That's something. I mean, it would be not the top geek in me to say no chance of a spoiler today. No.
I have not been cleared for any spoilers, unfortunately.
See, I chuck the ask out. I have to see what I say, that sort of thing. But no, for the next half an hour, what we're going to do is literally talk about the recent GT that took place that Andy was head honcho, and just talk about, obviously, because we have an interesting statistic in that Lila, she of second place a couple of years ago at Worlds, is now back-to-back GT champion with different lists, which is really impressive for its own way, and different faction rule breakdowns in the top 8 and top 4, which Andy, I will just basically chuck all that to you because that's your world. But before we do that, I forgot to make one other thank you earlier. Behind me, I have three boxes here of product that were very generously sent to us from Asmodee. So, Asmodee, thank you very much for sending some stuff. Jack is going to be collecting this from me on Thursday, and then he's going to continue. So he's going to paint up Bad Batch in a different colour scheme, and then we're probably going to give it away to people. And then he's going to do a painting tutorial for the Sleeper Cell and also for the Riot Control guys as well. So we'll put that on our YouTube channel. So that is something painting guys for you hobbyists out there who are stuck with ideas of how to paint. You can see what Jack does, and generally you can't really go wrong, can you? So yeah. So thank you, Asmodee. Thank you for some stuff. Hemel Hempstead. Andy, tell us what happened and everything, please.
Yeah, so as you said, Lila's the first person to have won two different GTs. We've never had in the UK two different winners, and she was the first and two different things. But I think the point shake-up obviously had an effect, which is good, because clones did not dominate or win. The first clone was in fourth. And there was two rebels in second and third, which was obviously the big shocker for everyone. Yeah, big thumbs up for it. One of them being Finn, obviously, who's a very, very good player from Germany. And then third place was Lee Wootton, also running some rebel, I think it was some rebel soup. I've got it open here. He's done it as a link, thank you. But it's like Han, Bad Batch. I think most of them have got Bad Batch, so obviously that's having a good positive effect on the game. But yeah, top eight is all bar Empire, which is a big change. So it's one CIS, which is Lila, three Rebel players, three clones, and a Shadow Collective. And the first Empire is down in 11th. So I'd say that's
interesting for that one.
Yeah. I think at the end, did you send a screenshot in our group chat of the top eight? Like,
Twas not me, it was Mr. Smith.
At the end of day one, it was like top three players were all Rebel players.
Yes.
It was like, they're all three undefeated and they're all Rebel players, which was like, huh, this is new.
It just hadn't happened for a while. So it's a refreshing change of pace.
Yeah. So I think that's a good indicator of the points change from 2 weeks ago, like positives. It's not clone dominating. And we've got Cardiff this weekend as well. So I think they've got 40 players. We only had 26 at Hemel. So I think that will be a bigger indicator of the balance as a whole, although there's not a single Shadow Collective player at Cardiff.
No way, really?
Yeah. So
that's actually quite surprising.
Trying to think who's going. The only person I know who's going who plays Shadow Collective is Lila. So
will she be going?
Her undefeated streak.
Is Gawain not going?
Gawain is TOing along with Jose.
Who are the two main Shadow Collective players
in Wales? Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, now that the points update has happened, Fury Road is riding again. It's bad. I'm sat there with a list in front of me, kind of ready to go. 1,000 points, 11 activations. So I'll be bringing that back to the tabletop very soon, I imagine.
Here's a question for you, Will. One for you. When you're making a list for a game, for any game really, to be fair, Legion, we'll go Legion specific, any game in general. When you're doing, do you pick based on a playstyle that you have, or a theme that you're going for, or you lean into a certain style, or like that unit is this, so I'll focus on its strengths and bring things that support it, if that makes sense. What do you do?
So for me, usually I will pick a unit that I want to play. So whatever I'm going to centerpiece the army around, and then I will build around that thing. So whether it be a commander, or Riot Stormtroopers or something like that, right? Pick one of those things and then build around the rest of it to sort of do my best to make that the front and center of the list.
Yeah, that makes sense. And function. It's a bit like say you might take in Rebels, go op Luke, and then support it with bang, and then have the core be this, that sort of thing. I'm with you.
Yep. Ooh, so how can I make X thing work the best that it can work? Yep. And hopefully the thing that I picked has a strategy that wins the game, but sometimes it doesn't. And then it's just kind of a we'll see what happens situation.
That is totally my wheelhouse.
So I end up going for units that I've done a lot of games with, because I think, right, if I honestly think about how many games I've done with speeder bike style units, I must be at like 700.
So crazy man.
It has to be up there somewhere. I did over 500 games with Blizzard Force, and I've done quite a lot of Fury Road as well. So, like, if you like certain units, I can almost try and build from there.
That leads into your playstyle, doesn't it? Like, what kind of approach and stuff.
I'm surprised I haven't gone with Tempest Force yet, because it's the only other one with half-decent bikes, but Fury Road, Blizzard Force, Tempest Force. There's a bit of a theme. I like battle horses.
And you experimented with the old 501st for a little while, didn't you, as well?
I had a look at it, but nothing was moving as fast as I probably liked it to. It's been a long time since I've played like Gunline. I did Luke Op Luke DLTs to win my invite to Worlds for the first one I went to 2 years ago. And then since they did the big points update to like Vigilance and Pikes and whatnot, in that points update, that's when I kind of shifted to different styles.
That makes sense. Back onto the Hemel stuff. So, of the list, sorry, so what was Lila's list then? So, obviously, she won.
Yeah.
And I'm right in thinking she's 31 games undefeated so far. She's hasn't.
31 tournament games undefeated.
That's so just crazy.
I think that's two GTs of five games each, because it was London was five, Hemel was five games, and then all the others are single day, like three round game tournaments that she's won.
Ouch. So,
yeah.
So what was the list then? Tell us the list.
Yeah, so she is running experimental droids. What did PKs do to hurt you, AMG, is the list name. with Kalani running aggressive tactics, lead by example. B2 HA with a HA heavy weapon as a super squad, or double stuffed or thick, whatever term, depending on what podcast you listen to. We need to kind of come up with a generic one for everything that we're all going to use, really.
I'll convene a meeting of the podcasters.
Yeah, we
like
should.
Like the beacons.
She's then got one B1 unit with just a PK worker droid, a B1 with the 5S, which is the sniper rifle, if I remember right, and then the PK and a PK droid in there as well. She's then got two BX commandos with sniper rifles, offensive push, transponders, and vibro swords, three droid eckers, and a snail tank with defensive protocols, link target array, high energy shells, and armor piercing shells.
Now, I've not played any EXD. I've played against it, obviously. I've not played as a player of EXD at all, actually. Mainly because I've had other fact I've played the clones and stuff like that. You have, though, with, mixed success. What makes that EXD list, one, really good? Why is it working for her? From what, what you've observed.
I mean, EXD's, because while I was sat on the final watching her play Finn, the rest of the games I'd been playing the bi player to give them a bit of a game in between, like judge calls and stuff. But on the final one, I said, can't give you a game. I'm going to focus on the final. But he was asking me questions about her list and what makes it good. And I said, well, experimental droids as a whole is very, very flexible. The free surge tokens gives you the flexibility to increase your movement. If you're just that little bit short of getting to a POI, so you can now just go, I'm fine, I've got no issues of getting there. Or in her case, you can make the commando droids charge in further than range two, because one speed three plus a speed two is just that little bit extra. Or if you're having a nice little gunfight off, you can just take an extra aim token, or you can take extra dice, depending on how much modding you want to be able to do. So it gives her a lot of flexibility. Or speed two droid eckers, which is what I want to try as well, because you can do it on them as well. So I think like that as a whole gives you a lot of flexibility in a game where movement is really important at the moment. Like as Pagani said earlier, like you're kind of fighting on two fronts. So if you win the left-hand front and you're losing on the right, you need to be able to reinforce it as quickly as possible. And having that extra mobility options in the battle force does give it an upper hand, because then you're not losing.
Mobility has been the key word, and movement has been the key word that when I've had friends who have returned to play, that they've said, I need to move around a lot more, don't I? And I said, yeah, mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
Yeah, you can't just bog down in the old ways of, I'm just going to aim, shoot, and hope, and then at turn six, dive onto key position, and the cloak smoke clears, and you've got more units in your opponent. Like, it just doesn't happen as much. But yeah, I think a list... the droid deck is just, I think, give her more flexibility. It gives her something to hide as she moves up. Now they're line of sight blockers. She did ask at the beginning of the tournament, do droid deckers block line of sight? And you sit there nodding your head. But
tell me why they don't. Just, I mean, I'm interested because
officially, if you build them as they come out of the box onto an empty plane, unpainted base, there's about a millimeter or two difference between a droidecker and the silhouette. So they don't block line of sight. As soon as you put any base in on there and paint them, it's enough of a millimeter gain to then block line of sight. So as long as you've painted your models, they do. So by that logic, because it's like a millimeter or two in it, I always rule that droidecker's, I think it was intended. I mean, Pagani can maybe give a slight hint. Obviously, he doesn't want to get himself in trouble, I'm sure.
I was not there for that specific conversation.
Yeah.
How convenient.
But I'm sure, like, the intention potentially was that they were designed to block line of sight completely. The forum ruling does say that you check per a model. And then, like, I go by what my models are, and I've got two units of block and one that doesn't, so I go with the majority for all tournament TO rules. Other TOs might rule differently, so always do check. But yeah, I did that with her, said that they block line of sight, and she obviously uses that to her advantage, as most players will, and get them commando droids up safely, or that B2 stuff, double stuff squad. It's quite scary at close range, so...
If you're not even the droidickers on their TOD, mm-hmm. I mean, three of them, like there's suppression. Oh, by the way, suppressive as well. No. That's still huge, mega huge. So if you're not dealing with them, then you're having a world of problems, lots of dilemmas.
It's one of my actual things I do like about the suppression changes, that suppression's removed after scoring now. So it adds in a real tactical element of, you can dive onto a point, and if she's not activated her droidekers yet, you're not scoring it. You might survive, like she can roll one hit, she will not care. She's like, oh, cool, you're not scoring that anymore. And that is a valid tactic now, where suppressing a unit to not score in the old rules was a lot harder. Where now it's fairly easy-ish. It's a lot easier, I'd say.
Question for Pagani on that then. Was that something that you had in mind when you were doing your 2.6 changes? Did you think... Because the suppression mechanic's a cool mechanic. I know different games do different style, like Bolt Action does a different thing and that sort of stuff. But did you think, no, this needs to be important because of panicking and thematic? Obviously, no one's going to sit out and run away and go, yeah, I'll just carry on when I'm being shot at. When I know the idea of suppression is like, oh, crap, something over here, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a huge point when we were talking about the different scenarios. And droidicas, I love that they're being talked about so much right now because they basically didn't change, but now they're amazing.
I would still put a critical one in, but that's me.
Oh, sure. I would feel something, right? But I think, like, it was one that we talked about a lot, and we had some wild droidica changes out there, and they're like, you know what? I don't think we need to change these at all. Like, these are great as they are, and I think it's an interesting thing. And we were worried when the update went out that everybody would just be like, eh, droidicas, meh. And then nobody would play them. We're like, oh, well, hopefully they find them because we think they're really cool and really sweet. There are a few more of those that we think are really cool and really sweet that people are not playing. I will tell you that. But the suppression stuff was a huge, huge, huge thing in the 2.6 mission update because... we had a lot of things like, oh man, Mandalorians in cover with a bunch of dodge tokens from Vigilance and Exemplar, like, man, that's really hard to kill. But you don't have to kill them anymore, right? Like, you don't have to defeat them anymore. You can suppress them. You can panic them. So having that sort of way around dealing with hyper-durable units that are stacking a million dodge tokens, a million surge tokens, all that kind of stuff, was really important. And it needed to not be linked to defeating miniatures or getting damage through, right? So that was something that was absolutely a huge, huge, huge topic when we were going through all this kind of stuff.
That's really cool. And I quite like that. I'm intrigued now to know what you think the other units that you'd like to see more of are.
You guys got to find them. I'm not going to tell you.
Oh, dang.
Well, but obviously, he's obviously going to say Riot Troop and Sleeper Cell because they're the new units to push sales, right?
I love Riot Troopers personally.
How convenient.
I'm going to be building a pair straight after this, ready for the weekend, actually. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So, obviously, Lila won with the experimental droids. Yep. Just touch on the tank very briefly, because your version was double tank, wasn't it? Am I right in thinking?
No,
Jeff had the double tank.
No, you couldn't take a double tank at 800 points. Like, the other version of EXD that's floating around is, instead of the three droid eckers, you can take a second snail. So Jeff took,
that's what I meant. That's the snail.
He took double snail to MKGT.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Talk to us about the Rebel lists. Obviously, Rebels now having the rise of the Rebellion. We're looking for that alliteration going on there. Talk to us about the lists tell us Finn, because obviously Finn came second.
Yeah, Finn came second.
What did Finn take?
So he ran Leia with Improvised Orders and Underworld Connections. Luke as Jedi Knight with Burst of Speed, Jedi Mind Trick, Force Push into the fray. Bad Batch with Omega, two Rebel Troopers naked, two Fleet Troopers naked, a full Commando squad with a transponder, a strike team with a sniper, one Rebel Sleeper Cell unit with an astromech, because I couldn't find anyone else to borrow the units from because they're not out in Germany yet. So I managed to scrounge one of them. It was like, I've got a list of two, and I was like, people are either using them themselves or they haven't got a spare unit. So he could only fit one in his list. And then two AT-RTs.
It helped anyway.
it was Dave Grant. Nice man. An AT-RT, two AT-RTs with the laser cannon, and then a unit of slingers with forest dwellers. So I think it's 12 acts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, 12 acts.
I love the theme of this one. It's like you've got all these stuff. Troopers, 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 and then characters, and then all of a sudden, who bought the cuddly toys in the corner? And then sitting there going, that sort of thing. It's quite funny in the corner. What was the prevailing tactic for Finn then? What was working for him? Obviously, it's nice to see a Rebel unit with a red save, which was obviously in Bad Batch, and with tactical, mm-hmm. and there was the rest of the keywords in the world, which is awesome. What was the prevailing tactic for him to do his thing?
From the games I've caught and watched of his, it was Luke Skywalker with Jedi Mind Trick leading into his one pip, You Serve Your Master Well. Using that to either activate the sleeper cell to shoot, because there are six models in a squad at two black dice each. So it's 12 dice is quite nice. Yeah. obviously you can't move fleets into combat now, but even a naked fleet squad is still eight dice rolling. Like, if it's pivotal, like to get that extra attack off to finish off a unit or something like that without having to swing Luke's lightsaber is very handy. Unfortunately, you can't do it to Bad Batch because they are an operative unit. Or if your opponent has, I don't know, say like ARC troopers, obviously quite prevalent still at the moment, so getting them to shoot 10 black dice and then spending your opponent's shared tokens from nearby is quite a little cheeky thing you can do. So
they're so mean.
yeah Finn's very mean.
They deserve it. The ARC troopers deserved it.
Yeah. I mean, that alone, with how many units are sitting on the table these days, it's not just one type of unit. It gives you so much flexibility. So if you're facing a Jedi and they've got a dodge token, well, you can serve your master on some commandos and fire their configs, and now your opponent's got to recover to get that back and you can shoot their Jedi. They can't spend the dodge token anymore, and you've got all of this like little synergy built into just Luke by himself. So I don't think he's the
can't do it to droids though, can you, Finn?
Yeah. I was deliberately trying to avoid that.
Finn would call us out for it if we did it, so it's only fair we return the favor.
Finn did attempt to do it on some droids. Unfortunately, I found out too late and corrected him on the fact that you can't do it to droids, which is really important.
It shocks me that Finn actually didn't know that already.
He admitted he's been doing it for a while.
Oh, naughty Finn.
Yeah.
You need to have a slap on the wrist there. Well,
as they say in Germany, das ist nicht wunderbar.
No, das ist nicht gut. Nicht gut.
But yeah, that led to many jokes over the weekend when someone would ask Finn for the rules, and I'm like, don't ask him. He doesn't know the rules. But yeah, I don't think it's just about Luke. He's got a good mix of command cards in there. He's got obviously the Bad Batch command card. He's got Leia's 2-pip to be able to move the Bad Batch around as well, which I think with Omega gives, because they can contest at range one, it gives them like a nice flexibility to be able to potentially touch 2 points. And with that speed, one move from Leia's command card kind of adds to that. So yeah, I think also it's his hands. It's a very good player. There's lots of activations. There's lots of units like that can at least hurt it little bits at a time. So
that's all good. I'm trying to think of anything that's really sort of that. Obviously, he played. You just said he played Lila in the final.
Mm-hmm.
An obvious win that Lila was going to pick it up, or is it actually quite touch and go?
It was a concession from Finn. It was, I think at the time it was 5-4, but Luke had just died. Bad Batch was down to Hunter. And at that point...
That's rough.
yeah. So at that point, he didn't have a chance. He'd already lost on one of the flanks, and they were playing Intercept. I think it's still called that, isn't it? It's just called Intercept. No, it's not the Transmissions, it's just Intercept now.
I'm thinking, what's the one with the scientists? Recover the Science.
It's Intercept the Signals, isn't it?
Yeah, I was about to say Intercept the Signals, isn't it?
It's not just Intercept.
What
would they be intercepting, Andrew? Come on.
Many things. The battle plans, I don't know.
Get it right, Terrell.
With one L.
I don't think Finn will say it was my table and my layout of the table. And we had a little bit of discussion. It was on the stream at the time, which you can feel free to go and talk about. So it was kind of a good discussion to have, because normally with terrain placement, I'd place things not parallel to the long board edge. I'd always twist a building, have it at a 45 degree angle, so it creates an opportunity to hide behind it when rotating. Yeah, when you'd go round. And he was like, oh, if I move out behind this building, then I'm exposed to that flank. And I was like, well, if Lila takes that opportunity, which she did, then that unit is exposed. So it's like he was gaining cover but being exposed from a different direction, and then if Lila took the opportunity, she was being exposed. So I was of the opinion that was fairly balanced on the table point of view, because you've got a risk and reward situation for both players. But what Finn was suggesting was that now all of the deployments are battle lines orientated. You want buildings to be more parallel to the board, so you've got something to hide behind. It was an interesting conversation, to contemplate.
Wouldn't it be really good if you could ask, I don't know, a game developer about theory about how maybe they would think about tables? What would be your idea, Pagani, about... I mean, this is actually sort of like a running debate, because we know that there's different schools of thoughts about table construction. Not the design of tables. Hobbyists make brilliant tables wherever they are. But this is like you have there seems to be a divide, like an American style, quote unquote, and a European style. And then actually sort of under that, there is a British style. So
sure.
It's weird how there's different styles for tables. What do you think for you is the I wouldn't say perfect because I don't think there's ever such a perfect for it, but like your preferred style, where would you put certain buildings? How would you orientate? Would you do like the parallel, like Andy's, like Finn's suggesting, or would you do like the angular?
Personally, I'm a fan of the angular, and then I'm also a fan of having a lot of terrain. I can tell you that when we play test with a lot of terrain, like a lot, like 6 or 8 buildings.
Excellent.
So I know the American style is a little less that, and then the European style, as far as I'm aware, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here, because I'm not super plugged in to how tournament tables are set up. But personally, I'm a more terrain rather than less terrain, lots of buildings, lots of barricades, lots of stuff. So, because I think that's good for a lot of reasons. One, I think it's good for the gameplay itself. Two, I think it looks amazing. And three, it gives a lot of hobby opportunities, which personally, I'm a sucker for good terrain.
Yeah. Like, we know that.
It draws me in.
It's so. I think that's when you look at it, you walk past. And I think this is something Ashik said back in March as well. When you walk past the table, you want to see and you see stormtroopers, which are iconic to see because everyone will go, oh, it's a stormtrooper, regard that sort of thing. And then they see the table, they want to link the two together.
Absolutely.
Because I think, and am I right in thinking that you said about terrain packs? You guys are doing a terrain pack in the future.
Yes.
I know that's a way, it's a little while off, but I'm sure it was revealed in Stravaganza, that sort of thing. But yeah, so we can safely say one of us. That's all good.
in terms of quality, I think like the tables at Worlds last year that I played on were fantastic. Like the final table for me and Luke Cook, that was a phenomenal table.
Like AMG isn't here to tell you how to set up your table, right? Like that's never anything that we're going to do specifically. I guess never say never, but that's not in our plans right now. But personally, I'm here for more terrain rather than less, because I think having the terrain ask the players questions and how they have to move or how they can do things. So sort of like exactly what you're talking about here, right? Like if I move up here, then I'm flanked here. Well, the other person has to one, see that, and then two, execute on it. I think is what terrain should be doing. Personally, it is sort of another opponent, as sort of Dallas always calls it. The terrain is another character on the table that is fighting you. Yeah. Very passively fighting you, but still fighting you.
Especially when it's a Sarlacc pit.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think with the changes to cover as well, I think that more terrain is definitely needed on the tables to kind of balance out where your kind of guarantees would have been before and sort of make it a little bit more dynamic to play on.
And you've got to be within half range as well. Like,
yeah.
That took me a little while to get my head around. Like, I'm still behind the, because I was still used to the old way. Like, there's a barricade or a building halfway between us, and I'd still get cover. And I'm like, no, I don't. I've got to be within half of that. So now when I'm moving stuff, it's my brain's flicked over to, right, place these guys within half to make sure I get that cover. So you definitely need more on the table, be it light or heavy, like a good mixture, obviously, but yeah,
which makes sense as well, because if you're nowhere near said wall, then you're not really in cover, are you, if that makes sense. In life, it's just sort of a thing in thing over there. Yeah, it's just like hello. Yeah. So it's a bit, yeah, you actually have to interact with it really to benefit from it, if that makes sense.
I think it's the new way where you have to be within half range is more you're actively taking cover versus passively there is something in the way.
Yeah, it's Alfie's dad's always one to say this, like, although when you're playing Legion is static, like you place your model, it stays there. Realistically, if you imagine each turn is, say, like equivalent to like D&D, where a round is 6 seconds, if you imagine a turn was 10 seconds, your troops moving up and taking cover and then being shot all happens simultaneously. But from a balance point of view, it obviously makes sense to do things sequentially. Like, so yeah, you've got to imagine it in like a film kind of style, haven't you, really?
God, just playing a dice game simultaneously, that would be mental.
There's some more games out there that do that, and it's pretty wild.
I'm just picturing certain players of our friends and then like playing, and it would be like they'd never finish the game. It'd be insane. talk to us about obviously, so we had a third rebel in the top three. So obviously you spoke about Finn. So that was Lee Wootton, you say?
Yep, Lee Wharton.
What was his list, please?
He was running Han Solo with Improvised Orders and Up Close and Personal, The Bad Batch with Omega, Chewie with Protector, 3 Rebel Troopers with the Ion Gun and Recon Intel at the expense of 8 points now, and then 3 Sleeper Cells, so that's why Finn can borrow any, with all of the Astromechs, all with target and scopes.
All in the tactics and the plan. No, yeah. My Astromechs, no.
And then 3 AT-RTs with the laser cannon. And I think, looking at both of these lists now and a few other Rebel lists at the time, it looks like AT-RTs are also back on the menu, like a droidecker, like something that was never really taken competitively or even fun, but now people seem to be bringing them to the table quite a lot.
Why is that?
Because they block line of sight. I think that's a big change of it. And then I think also low dice pools aren't a bad thing anymore, and the laser cannons are very consistent. It's 2 red and a black, is it? Or is it a red and 2 black? 1 red and 2 black.
Yeah, red, 2 black.
So if you're averaging 2 or 3 hits of that into cover, then most people are going to blank out on the cover save. So it gets through. And obviously, from reading the dev article from AMG, that was the design philosophy, that low dice pools should be impactful, big dice pools should be impactful, but your cover is more meaningful against the larger shots. And it makes sense when you look at it from why certain units of low dice pools like Han Solo is coming back, and we've all seen Sharpshooter 1, like there is a big difference between light cover and heavy cover. I'm finding heavy cover, oh yeah, I will block 2 out of 6 here. Light cover, if I roll 6 dice, I'm like, no, I'm not even blocking 1.
Unless you're Chris Smith.
It's slightly worth mentioning that the cover is actually the same no matter your dice pool in the current system, but it is better as compared to the old system for smaller dice pools and worse for larger dice pools compared to the old system. So, but it is a linear scale in the current system, so it doesn't matter how many dice you throw, cover is always the same.
Yeah. And that, reading that article was really good, actually. It'd be nice if there was more to go like that. Because for me anyway, I really liked the developer's insight into why things were changed. But yeah,
people like my math.
I really did. I sat there and I was like, oh yeah, that all statistically makes sense. And as someone who does maths all day long at work, it was, definitely appeals to me.
Sorry, you were like, statistically.
Statistically.
We have a lot of statistically at work. So
I think the Rebel AT-RT also jumping up to surge to defend has also helped massively.
That's a big change.
Because now you need, so statistically you need 11 hits to one shot an AT-RT now. which very, very few units can actually put a dice pool through of that size.
It's also got Scout 1 in the buff when it got revamped.
And the reposition, which has been
which has been huge on vehicles.
It's not just huge, but it's huge for the AT-RT, because otherwise it's just, because they get the angles, it's not got a 360 gun, is it?
I'm just sat here dreaming of speeder bikes getting it, but
didn't say the magic words. Not happening.
You've got there was quite a lot of vehicles. I don't have the stats, but I remember seeing at least 2 Saber tanks. There was all the AT-RTs. Someone was running double AAT. And there's quite a few vehicles, and I think that's due to the rule changes as well, which is nice, because I think they were few and far between for units that are quite iconic. It's good to see them on the table.
Well,
being impactful.
Cover, the changes to cover have brought the AAT out of hiding, because it's no longer getting 4 hits through after a double volley. It's more like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Good old barrage.
Yeah. Another similar, and I imagine he wants the AT-RTs as portable cover to help them Rebel Sleeper Cells hit hard, with Tactical and the Astromechs to give them the dodge to keep them alive. And then obviously Bad Batch, and rather than having Luke, he's gone for Han Solo and Chewie as his backup heavy hitters.
Interesting, especially with the Guardian like that. That's all good fun.
Yeah, definitely helps keep Bad Batch alive.
And I suppose lastly, just we won't go through every list on there, but was there one list that you saw at the tournament that made you go, I like that, I want to try that, and
yes,
and why is there, I suppose, is the one. Go on.
And it was called We Have a Red Save Faction at Home, which is General Grievous with Endurance, a B2 with the ACM and a Worker Droid, two B2s with the ACM and an extra man, and then one Magna Guard with impact grenades and just an extra dude, a Magna Guard with comms relay, two more Magna Guards with extra dudes, and then three droid eckers. So it's just a whole army of red saves and Grievous. Apart from the droid eckers.
I was about to say, the droid eckers aren't red saves, but fair play.
Let's just say, red save droid eckers. No, thanks.
No, I disagree. Yes, please. That'd be fun.
I was rooting for Matt from the get-go when I saw that list, and it got me really excited. I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool. He only lost two games. First round was to Finn. And then he lost to Nav, and that was it. At that point, Nav was 0-2 as well, so I was really rooting for Matt to beat Nav, make Nav going 3-0 on day one, or 0-3. Sorry,
I was about to say, but that's interesting. So, with all that in mind, and you having seen the first GT since the errata, what's your takeaways that you can now feed back to Pagani and just say, look, this is really cool. It's worked out really well.
Yeah.
What's your key takeaways from seeing this and games at this GT?
I think my first feels was it was more balanced. I think the top eight represented that. I think nice celebration. I definitely think the points reigned in the clones, and I think everyone was talking about that leading up to it, going, oh yeah, what we're going to do, because I let list submissions go up to literally the night before of the event, just because of the points went live on the 14th, didn't they, I think? And the event was on the 16th, so it's like 2 days technically. So,
can I say yes, something like that?
Yeah. So... some lists, I think some people are like, oh, my list has dropped 200 points or gone up 200 points. And you're like, oh, well, that shows how where the issues might have lied. But I still think clones are good, which it shows with them still being in the top eight. Obviously, Rebels, everyone was whinging they're not good. I think two players have just quite proven that, that you still can take them. So, yeah, I think so far, first impressions are good. It usually takes a couple of months for the little ones that have sneaked through and avoided the nerf to come out the woodworks.
I refer this kind of change to conversations I've had with both Jeff Porritt, Lord and Saviour Podfrey, and Dave Grant, in that sometimes it's not obvious what is good until it's been found. And it sounds really stupid, but it's the way, what they mean by that is it takes time for these things to sieve through. I had a private discussion with Jeff, and I said, I don't know if I think Yoda's been hurt and all this sorts of stuff, but the more and more I thought about it, I actually think, actually, no, you can, that means just now try different things with Yoda, in that it used to be a case of, obviously, now the change with the wording where they can't perform attacks with the charge and the guidance stuff, you can't do things out of their activation, that sort of thing. Okay, fine. But that just means you do different things with Yoda, and you can take different force powers with Yoda. So maybe instead of taking instead of taking force push, maybe you just chuck on guidance and make him a true support character, and say, look, his extra surge tokens to fully support. Oh, and look at that, you've got 35 points more to play with now. So these are all little extra things that, once found, there'll be a different way. Interestingly, my MKGT list went down by about 5 points, so it made no difference for me. So that was, and I took Yoda, a tank, a super squad with fives and a shotgun, and a couple of barks. The only thing I'm going to change out of that, I changed the barks, because the barks didn't seem to be effective, slash I wasn't using them as effective as I should, because the clone commandos, Republic commandos, were just going, see you later. So yeah, there's loads of things. So don't despair, players of clones. I'm sure you'll find something for us all, for everyone to sort of lament against there. But it's nice to see everything else on top and have its moment in the sun in terms of Rebels. Although for Jack, I'm sure Jin will come to the top at some point.
I was just looking at stats while you were talking just then. Like it shows.
I'm done with
the
feel for you.
Recon intel prior, so if you look at like MKGT, obviously we had a lot more players. We had 92 players. Recon intel was taken 94 times, and that was in August for Pagani. So like it's a couple of weeks. I think I had 6 weeks after the 2.6 update for this. It might have been less than that. And then as a comparison, we had 25 players and recon intel was only taken 4 times. So you can see like the drastic percentage increase, like difference there. And medical droids still taking quite a few. There's 12 of the Empire medical droids in there. But the upgrades...
Didn't Dave have like 5 of them?
Yeah, I think that one only went up a little bit, right? Like,
yeah, it's like 3 points, wasn't it? Yeah,
all medics went up by 3 points, I think it was.
It wasn't the one that went up like 14 points or something.
But like if you look across the like generic upgrades, they're a little bit more spread out now compared to being like top heavy a couple of months ago. So small data sample, but a good reflection, and hopefully Cardiff will be similar reflective for that this weekend.
I mean, that's definitely the hope, right? Is not to remove recon intel from lists entirely, but make you not take it on every unit. And not that everybody was doing that, right? But like, there were definitely lists that were running 4, 5, 6 of them. And we're hoping that we can open up some space and you only run 1 or 2 of them. Or on just your important units, or the units that you really needed on, right?
And you now look at a different upgrade that potentially was being never included because it wasn't as efficient as recon intel. So
exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Ollie, any thoughts on lists and or Hemel and or upcoming Cardiff stuff?
So, I mean, I've been on a somewhat hiatus of play for personal reasons, so I've not really had much chance to look into what's been going on and different things kind of pushing forward. I like the new points update. I think that's certainly going to push me towards making a few more lists. Like I've got a revamped Fury Road to look at. Blizzard Force is still out there as a potential to get back out on the table. But I think when I probably start getting into Worlds focus, which will be January, where I'll start playing 15 games a week, mostly with Andy.
Tell me you don't have children, because that was, like, I wish I had time to do that much game. It's just like I'm barely able to get in one per
week. How many games does the actual developers get in a week? That's an interesting question.
That's a good one. How much do you get to play?
So the developers, lucky them, get to play test. We play test with basically 2 full 8 hours days a week. So how many games? We don't normally fully play a game like all the way through. We're testing to find an interaction.
Same as Smiley, yeah.
Or that kind of thing. It's less full games.
Yes, it's similar to what Andy and I do. So on the lead up to Worlds last year, I think we were doing, between us, it would be like 2-3 nights a week where you'd get sort of like 2 to 4 games in per evening, and then you'd have a tournament at the weekend, which would either be 3 games on a Saturday, or you'd have a full weekender, which would be 5/6 games. That you churn out. And then, I mean, we had like World Team Championships, which that was another 6, 9. 12 games. Yeah, so that was like 12 games in 3 days, which was, I forgot how to human on the way home. But then again, as I did after Worlds was like 12 games plus a very nice, enjoyable karaoke social. And when I got onto that plane, I think I just melted. plus all the lead up to it, though, because you just end up in some like crazy burnout after like so many games. Like, I think I decided on my list for Worlds 4 weeks before Worlds, and I got about 55, 60 reps in before getting to Worlds.
Very nice. I do miss doing that myself. I used to do things like that when I worked at the hobby store. Guys would just come in and be like, great, it's noon. There's not a lot of people here. Let's play a game. Re-rack, 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 re-rack. Oh, there's a customer. Great. Let's go help them out. Okay. So that was really good. I miss that a lot. I used to do that all the time.
The what I really like about it, obviously, we've touched on this before, and I think we mentioned it to you, at least one of us. I know I probably did it when we were over in the States earlier in the year, that it's the, we love playing the game, but we also love the social aspect of it as well. Ollie's just touched on the karaoke night prior to his victorious Sunday.
That was that was something else. Not that,
yes,
not that I, not that I have a lot of memories of such an event, but you know, it was, from what I've been told, it was very fun.
100% was. But it does lead me to the question, obviously, we all do karaoke as players, like generally if there's an event after we do karaoke. What would Pagani's karaoke song of choice be, should he be singing?
Oh, I'm a tequila guy. The song that has like four total words in it that are all tequila.
Yes, okay. that's called cheating, but go on.
I think the real question is, though, no doubt I will be in charge of organising the Milwaukee social, as I was in charge of organising the Chicago social somehow. And so, will we be able to convince you to come and join us for a little sing-song next year?
It'll depend on time and when and where. Because last year at EPCON, I was working a lot of hours. Because I was through the hall, through every round, every time.
Can I use the power of persuasion to say, look, it'll be my birthday. It's my 40th that weekend. You've got to.
Yeah, I'll be having a look. My Inspector Gadget hasn't begun yet. The planning begins in January for that one.
No, it's all good. But I think this is now a good time to sort of start wrapping up the show, really, I think. So, unless, Andy, you have anything more to say about Hemel or anything like that, really?
No, it was a great time. Everyone had great games, and then we all went out for a nice Japanese, and then went to this, took the Germans to experience Wetherspoons, which
they got to enjoy the floor. Oh, you horrible person. They've
got to show them the carpet. You've got to show them the carpet.
Oh, God.
Just for context, I didn't know this was a thing either, but every Wetherspoons, which is like a pub chain in the UK, and there's hundreds of them.
It's a rubbish pub chain.
It is a rubbish pub chain.
It is the cheapest pub chain.
Cheapest.
Yeah, that's why you go there, because it's really cheap. Sure. But every carpet in all of their hundreds of pubs is unique. So they have their one-off designs for every single Wetherspoons.
Get out. No way, really?
Yeah. Yep. It's a fun fact about Wetherspoons. So when you go into your local Wetherspoons, admire that carpet, because you will never see it in any other pub.
Well, you won't see it in any of the Wetherspoons.
No, any other pub. It is a unique carpet that they design for each of their pubs.
I can't say I tend to go to a pub for the carpet, but now I can say I wipe for this once and now and again.
You got to go to a Wetherspoons now.
That's your next excuse to get permission to go out with the guys. But I need to go. I need to see the carpet.
Lads, can I have? I'll have a couple of beers. This, and 1 second. Let me just take a picture of the carpet. Oh yeah, see what I mean? It's different to the other ones.
Apparently, that's a fun fact for you about the Wetherspoons.
Do you know what though? I bet Finn absolutely loved that fact.
Not as much as the rest of them, but yeah.
I was going to crack out the Finn impression.
That's just his natural state, isn't it?
Yes,
it is. Yeah. We love him, though.
We do love you, Finn. We look forward to your return and all that. But it's cool. Ollie, do you have anything to sort of add about games and things recently before we move on to any other business?
No, I've played like none, so I've got nothing to add.
Cool. Right. Well, in which case, we've got a couple of things on the end of the business. First off, it has its own theme tune. We'll quickly talk about this. Yes, it's the Charity Legion Football League, of which the content creators of the Legion World are taking part. And I thought we'd do a little update to say many things happened this weekend. And I'm not saying this because I had a big win, I promise. But I thought I'd just bring it up because it's there. So this weekend, My awful team played the current leading team belonging to Will from Stabcast and absolutely wrecked him. But it was good. But let's have
boo,
a look.
Stabcast.
Austin Miller's team beat LJ. Zeus Juice's team beat Valor for Valor's. Stabcast Doctor beat Ollie by a big margin.
Hey, no, it's fair. I have given up on understanding. It's because Austin snaked me out of players because I don't understand how it works.
To be fair, many just like in real life, you've given up as per like the Jets and the Panthers, that sort of thing. Evan Paul beat Rex De Vera. Andy, you got a win. You beat Shadow Scout. You beat Shadow Scout this weekend. Well done. Stabcast Tim beat our very own Jack Prowling by a big margin. Jack hasn't won a matchup yet. It's a shame. And last year's champion narrowly beat Matthew Haslam, who now resides in Australia, in his matchup this weekend.
I've got him this week.
Oh, that's fun. Which leaves the league where I just see, say, where is it at? Can I see the whole standings? Does it want to give me the standings? There we go. There's the standings. Evan Paul is leading the way in the MOV division 10-1, and Stabcast Will, despite his loss, still leads the other division 9-2 with let's see, where are you guys? Andy, you're sixth in your division, and Ollie, you're seventh, and then I'm fifth, but there's all to play for in our division. It's quite mixed up there. So that is our charity league update. Remember, the winner of that league has everyone else donate $25 to their charity of choice. Last year it went to Pause for Ability because Brendan won it. Don't think Brendan's going to win this year, but hey, anything can happen. Anything can happen. That's that. That's the small update there. Again, thank yous to Asmodee for the product stuff that is going to go to Jack, and he's going to make some awesome painting videos. Again, also thank you to our Patreon supporters. If you're interested in supporting what we do, you can go to patreon.com/thatsnomoon, where you can find out how to support us more if you so wish, and then you can submit questions now and again to developers.
See? Hello.
Exactly. Loads of other stuff going on. Obviously, YouTube channel is youtube.com/@tnmpod, where Tom and Jack do all their stuff there. And we had a sponsorship query this week for an event. Obviously, that was down in Redruth, that Ollie and I will respond to later on. So we haven't forgotten. We'll sort that out, Toby, later on. Andy, if people want to contact you, how can they do it? Or if, unless you wanted to, by the way, plug one of your other million events that you run.
obviously, tickets are on sale for Chopper Base Open for August next year, which can be purchased from chopperbaseopen.co.uk. The next UKGT, and it's the last one of the season, is in Nottingham in January. You can buy your tickets from the UKTC's website. We'd like to obviously make the last one a good one before we head off to Worlds and start the next season, so get buying. And then I think that's it on the events that I'm running.
Cool.
I don't run events in December
because we have Christmassy things going on, which is
fair.
Ollie, if people want to contact you about stuff, how can they do that?
She can find me on the Discord at cbt3-thatsnomoon. You can also email me at ollie@thatsnomoonpod@gmail.com. Podcast.
Ollie@thatsnomoonpodcast.com. That's how that works. Ollie@thatsnomoonpodcast.com.
As we are all very well aware of, I am good at two things, and technology is not one of them.
No, but you know what's really good? You haven't broken the recording this week, whereas Jack did last week. So you get points and prizes there, whereas Jack did. So
don't jinx it.
No, I'm not. This is why we're running out soon.
What's this X up at the top here before?
We were joined this week by Will Pagani of AMG. Thank you very much for joining us. And if you people have queries about product and things like that, where may they direct their queries to?
You can go to the Atomic Mass the Atomic Mass Games social media accounts on X, Facebook, Instagram.
Let's go with yes. Probably.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
And you can also email info@atomicmassgames.com with any questions. If you have organized play questions, there is op@atomicmassgames.com. And that is for support requests or tournament questions or anything like that. Cool. And then, of course, there's also the rules forum, here we go. I think it's just forums.atomicmassgames.com with an S.
Correct.
Forums?
Yep. I'll just check.
We did it.
I like it.
I have an email, but you can't have it.
No, that's fine. I don't blame you. That's absolutely fine.
If you have any questions, email Ollie at thatsgamingpodcast.com.
I'm sure Ollie will then forward on to us, but that, yeah, so that's cool. Thank you for that, Pagani. Obviously, if you want to contact Tom and Jack about videos, just email Tom at thatsgamingpodcast.com. Tom is going to be starting up doing the battle reports soon again now that his child is not a newborn. Still new, but not a new newborn. Jack, slightly later because his is a touch younger. So it's just they both had children really close together. How did they plan that? Independently of their own wives, by the way, not their own, that's separate. and I'm Cockles at thatsnowmoonpodcast.com. You can contact me about anything into the game events. We'll put people in contact. It was really nice to manage to get people in contact in Northern Ireland recently because we put a request out, someone messaged the show, and then we said, hey, there's people looking to play in Northern Ireland, and someone said, hey, can you pass me their details? I'd like to play, and managed to hook them up for a game. So that sounds positive. So if you're looking for games and looking to get in contact with people who want to play wherever you are, just feel free to contact us and we can try and hook you up. I'm still trying to find, if you are in York, can you let us know, because there's a bloke in York whose name escapes me right now, not New York but York, the original. He's trying to find games, so just get in contact with us and we can sort that out. And yeah, that's pretty much it, really. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Head over to our social media pages, thatsnowmoonpodcast.com and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, thanks for listening. Any final words, boys?
Goodbye.
Yes. Bye. Thanks for listening. This has been That's No Moon Podcast. I've been Cockles. Goodbye.
You've been listening to That's No Moon, a Star Wars Legion podcast. To keep up to date with us, please like and follow us on Facebook, That's No Moon, a Star Wars Legion podcast, and Instagram, That's No Moon Podcast.